Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Admiralty when we come back. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school, and this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of any alleged crime, and what should you say to the police or investigators, and what you ought not to say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself in your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion hearings, trial, and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, conduct discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. Now, there are 28 elements, 28 things to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure. Rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So keep your mouth shut, don't say anything, and then shut up. And after rule one is out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call us. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc. That's for home education. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about admiralty. People right here oftentimes say, geez, I'm from the People's Republic of Michigan, as if Michigan is the worst place in the world, something worse than communist China. The difference is that in communist countries, they don't make any bones about it. They don't have any common law there to start with, and so everybody works under admiralty or the Roman civil law. These old pagan legal systems that go back to the Babylonian mystery religion are actually derived from religion. People say, well, we need a separation of church and state. Well, my God, if you need a separation of church and state, you sure want to get rid of admiralty. That comes from religion. Well, I guess you need to get rid of the common law, too, because that comes from Moses at Mount Sinai. And gosh, we need to get rid of equity because that comes from Solomon splitting the baby in two. Yeah, if you want to get down on the bottom line, it all comes from God. It all comes from somebody's God, some religion. Well, historically, the early American common law came from the Anglo-Saxon common law in England. It existed, controlled, and ruled the land of England prior to the reign of William the Conqueror, which occurred in 1066 AD when he conquered the Anglo-Saxons. This common law was basically the golden rule that stated, do not unto others as you would not have others do unto you. After William the Conqueror, the golden rule was changed to, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Now, you can really see the first is the higher form of the rule. Now, when the Anglo-Saxon tribes migrated from northern Germany to Denmark, they brought the common law with them. In fact, when the early priests who had come to Denmark to convert the Germans to Christianity, when they returned, they said, these people do not need the law, they are already practicing the law. Some writers profess that Jesus Christ actually taught the common law in Denmark on a lake where the word law allegedly originated. In any event, the common law stems from Scripture, wherein God recorded his law through Moses. Now, the best way to explain what this common law is to explain what it is not. There are fundamentally two competing systems of man-made law in the world today that are in constant ideological conflict with one another. One is called the common law, the other is called the civil law. It's also known as the Roman civil law. J. Reuben Clark, he was a former U.S. Undersecretary of State and ambassador to Mexico. He succinctly stated the principles and applications of these two systems of law when he wrote, quote, briefly and stated in general terms, the basic concept of these two systems was as opposite as the poles. In the civil law, the source of all law is the personal ruler, whether prince, king, or emperor. He is the sovereign. In the common law, certainly as finally developed in America, the source of all law is the people. They as a whole are sovereign. And during the centuries, these two systems have had an almost deadly rivalry for the control of society. The civil law in its fundamental concepts being the instrument through which ambitious men of genius and selfishness have set up and maintained despotisms. The common law, with its basic principles, being the instrument through which men of equal genius, but with love of mankind, burning their souls, have established and preserved liberty and free institutions, the Constitution of the United States embodies the loftiest concepts yet framed of this exalted concept. Unquote. J. Reuben Clarke. I might add that instead of the people, the law came from God. The common law comes from God. 22 principles of the Ten Commandments are contained in our federal Constitution. I don't think that anybody dreamed those up. That came a long time before anybody in 1787. You know, principles of law that require two or three witnesses. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. That's a rule of law that we Anglo-Saxons follow from our Constitution. Well, that comes from Deuteronomy 19:15. That didn't come from the people. It came from God. And there's 21 more of those. Now, the American heritage of freedom is a direct result of the common law, which derived its authority solely from usages and customs of immemorial antiquity. Well, I don't know, immemorial, it goes back to 1329 B.C. with Moses at Mount Sinai. The common law is the legal embodiment of practical sense, and its guiding star has always been the rule of right and wrong, called the Golden Rule, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Our founding fathers wrote a declaratory trust known as the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson listed 18 grievances, and in each one of these grievances, he showed how we were being denied our rights as free-born Englishmen. The declaratory trust was an appeal to the nations of the world that the acts being committed were against the laws of nations, and the Declaration of Independence became an ordinance, public trust, within the law of nations. Now, the English people had a simple and a pure common law of individual rights and property rights derived from the Ten Commandments, the Mosaic Law. But there also existed alongside of that law another type of law, a law that was as old as the common law, the law of commerce. Commerce, the maritime law. The earliest recorded knowledge of maritime law is in the Isle of Rhodes that dates back to about 900 B.C. The Isle of Rhodes, 900 B.C. It's a law that's as old as the common law. Doesn't replace the common law, it's just ancient. There also existed the laws of Oleron, laws of the Hanseatic League, which were merely reiterations of the earlier civil laws. The Romans had their maritime law, which was their civil law. This was the law of commerce, whereas the common law was the law that had to do with the land and with the people on the land. Historically, the common law has only dealt with land, labor, and substance. It's the law of property. The common law, boys and girls, is the law of property. Land, labor, and substance. Now, admiralty law deals with profit, taxes, contract. And, of course, we Americans are involved in contracts. Boy, we contract with our government. We contract with our corporations. And the corporations contract with the government. The government contracts with the corporations. It's an incestuous relationship. And it's a relationship of money and power. Money and power. The corporations have the money and the government has the power. The people have neither. And then they wonder why they live in the People's Republic of Michigan, trying to work for Ford Motor Company under the Social Security Act through FEMA, the EPA, and the State Tax Commission, the IRS, and all this myriad of government institutions. And they wonder why they live in the People's Republic. The civil law was never part of the laws of England and has never been declared as law of the realm by the Parliament, nor by many experts of English jurisprudence such as Coke, Blackstone, or Sir John Fortescue. Now, when William the Conqueror conquered England in 1066, he subjugated all of the Saxons to his rule, but there was one part of England that he wasn't able to conquer, and it was called the inner city of London, London Town. The merchants had a wall around it, and they brought their ships carrying food up to their facilities and unloaded them. William built the White Tower to look down on the city to see why his men were losing. He finally decided that he wasn't going to take London Town and that his control was slipping. So he went to the merchants and he said, "What is it that you people want?" And the merchants said, "We want the maritime law. We want the law of merchants." In those days, they called it Lex Mercantoria, and William said, "You have it." And to this day, the inner city of London has its special law where the merchant's law is practiced. In fact, the mayor of London, the Lord Mayor of the City of London, escorts the Queen into the city. The Queen does not have jurisdiction over that one square mile. The Bank of England is located in the City of London. Now, I'm not talking about the metropolitan city that you call London. I'm talking about one square mile, like the Vatican, sitting in the heart of Rome. One square mile, sitting right there in the heart of England. Not part of England. It's a sovereign territory out by itself. Has been since 1066. In 1215, at Runnymede, the barons in England made King John sign the Magna Carta, which became the basic document espousing fundamental rights of the English people to this day. Most American colonists were well-schooled in the common law, and because many of them were merchants and traders, they also knew the merchants' law. They knew the king and parliament were forcing the admiralty jurisdiction upon them, and this finally forced them to revolt. The admiralty system of law practiced on the continent of Europe, in contradistinction to the common law of England, was called civil law, or Roman civil law, which is derived from the law of the ecclesiastical chancellors. This is partly the ancient law of Rhodes, the law of merchant traders upon commercial documents, contracts. In the civil law, prosecution is by the chancellor, who is not an impartial referee at the dispute. This civil law was never part of the law of England and has never been declared as laws of the realm by the Parliament, nor by any experts of English jurisprudence, such as Coke, Blackstone. And as English society developed over the years, situations arose for which the courts of common law could provide no relief by any precedent. The controversies did not involve property. They didn't involve any substance. The only recourse was to petition the king, who delegated his first minister to solve these problems. The minister was called a chancellor, and the relief granted was called equity. This equity meant that what would be fair if the common law principle was extended and applied to the case at hand. So as a result, there developed in England and in America two distinct systems of law and courts, each having a peculiar and particular application and jurisdiction. Equity jurisdiction is designated in personam, a jurisdiction in which the individual does not have any rights, and one to which the individual can be subjected only if he volunteers or gives his informed consent. Now, remember, we talked about that earlier. That's Judge Judy. We can submit to binding arbitration. We can submit to Judge Judy. But it has to be by informed consent. It has to be by your voluntary action. In equity, there are no jury trials. The powers of the common law jury to hear and decide questions of both law and fact are exercised by the chancellor. However, there may be advisory juries to ease the conscience of the court and determine certain facts, but they're not permitted to hear any arguments regarding the law. Now, does that sound very familiar? You go into a jury trial today, and the judge makes the jury swear an oath that they will decide the facts and that he will give them jury instructions. Jury instructions. Excuse me, boys and girls, but jury instructions is nothing more nor less than jury tampering. You see, the old common law jury was the jury of the congregation. Going back to Moses' time, certain cases, certain events were to be tried by the congregation. And if we didn't like the king's law, the common law is called the law of the commoners, and the equity or the admiralty is the law of the nobility. So the king has all of his nobles under contract, and they swear allegiance to the king. The people swear allegiance to God, and the people obey God and keep his commandments. Well, that's the way the game is supposed to be played. Now, the people have become noblemen. The people have sworn their allegiance to their God, the United States of America. And so people today, they want to fight for their country. They want to fight for the United States of America. What kind of a God is the United States of America? A paper entity, a fiction of law, a creation of men. That's no real God. That's not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But it's a God. We don't deny that. I mean, you've got your God, but you really think this God of the United States is as powerful as the creator of the universe, the guy that hung the moon out there in orbit? Well, in this country, the civil law has always been outside of the common law, operating on summary process in gross violation of our rights to due process, as the common law is absolutely distinguished from the Roman or civil law systems, so says People versus Ballard. And a good example of the separation between the two is contained in the Constitution of the State of Iowa, in Article 5, Section 6, which states in part, the district court shall be a court of law and equity, which shall be distinct and separate jurisdictions. Now, obviously, they were separated in the State of Iowa. The principles of the common law and of equity are those as distinguished and defined in England. Equity jurisdiction, chancery jurisdiction in this country, is the same in nature and extent as equity jurisdiction in England, from which it was derived. Our Declaration of Independence stated that America had been progressively subjugated to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Foreign to. This foreign jurisdiction was a jurisdiction of lawless equity out of the Roman civil law in the form of such obscenities as writs of assistance, which allowed summary plundering of the colonists, a summary plundering of their wealth and substance to the advantage of the East India Trade Company, which controlled the Parliament. Well, hell, what's different about Enron and General Motors and Microsoft controlling your Congress to this day? What's the difference between the fascist corporate business-government relationship that you see through the lobbyists bribing your congressmen and your representatives today? Can you tell me? The same thing is happening in America today with the administrative demands made by OSHA or the EPA or the IRS upon non-enfranchised persons. And I put the non-enfranchised persons in parentheses because most people in this country are enfranchised. They're not unenfranchised. Most people in this country have social security numbers and driver's licenses and birth certificates and marriage licenses and business licenses, and they belong to the PIC program or they're subscribing to welfare and food stamps or something. 51% of Americans have some kind of government check or benefit coming to them. Well, these writs of assistance, these writs, perpetrated by the commercial interests in Parliament, were given authority by an equitable jurisdiction called an assumpsit. This assumpsit, which gave satisfaction pursuant to the customs of the civil law, have been voluntarily entered into. They're contracts. It's an agreement that you make. And they had been an old debt action at law, triable by a common law jury until 1760, when Lord Mansfield, the Chief Justice of England, arbitrarily denied trial by jury in assumpsit, and then removed that action from the courts of common law into the courts of equity under the King's Chancellors, where a jury trial was not allowed, and there was merely a summary proceeding with no semblance of due process of law. Well, hell, that's what you got here in the United States today. Summary process. You go into the traffic court, and you line up with the rest of the sheep, and the judge says, you want to plead guilty or not guilty? And you say, well, I want to plead guilty with an explanation, and you give him an explanation, and you pay your tax, and you walk out of there. Now, if you have an infraction, you can't get a jury trial. And you may have a statutory provision that gives you a jury trial, but it's advisory in nature. Or if it's not advisory, then it's an admiralty court. And if it's an admiralty court, then why are you complaining about the admiralty flag? You see, the common law deals with property and substance, and the civil law deals with contracts and breach of contract. So when you're taken into the traffic court, it's been alleged that you've breached your contract. There's a breach of contract there. There's a duty that you have that you didn't perform. And the first duty is you didn't get a driver's license. And there's a property dispute. The state is claiming that you're driving their automobile on their road without their permission. And you're contending that you're driving your automobile on your road because that's a public right-of-way and you own that car, and you don't own the car and you don't own that state highway. Now, that's what the controversy is all about. Now, there was a time when we had public right-of-ways. That's just about passed. Just about passed. See, in the 1950s, President Eisenhower came along with this interstate, they just celebrated the 50th year here the other day, it's 1956, interstate freeway system. And those aren't public right-of-ways, those are federal highways. The federal government owns that ground. That's the bottom line. Now, that ground goes through, or that ground is occupied in Kansas or in Nebraska or some state. And so the state regulates it. And they come along and say, well, you want to drive your car over here on our federal highway, you got to have a license. Well, that's a far cry, you know, from our common law rights to travel under Crandall versus Nevada. And I don't deny it, you know. I mean, I can see what the government has done. The government has usurped the power of the people because the people evidently didn't care or didn't understand what their powers were. Government is not the servant of the people. Government is the absolute master of the people. You people out there cringe when the government agent comes over. You don't sit there and say to the government agent, what are you doing here and what do you want? You just say yes, sir, and no, sir, which is what you learned when you were in the Army, remember? Americans have been taught to be subservient to their government masters, and they are. Now, the common law is absolutely distinguished from the Roman or the civil law system. And the principles of the common law and the principles of equity are those as distinguished and defined in England. These writs, perpetrated by the commercial interests in the Parliament, were given authority by an equitable jurisdiction called assumpsit. Now, assumpsit is a contract. And the plea of non-assumpsit by way of confession and avoidance is the plea that says, well, I want to come in and demur. I'm not a person who's enfranchised and I don't have any contract. Why are you messing with me? Now, the practical application is this. If you don't have a social security number, you won't have any contact with the IRS. Well, of course, unless you're out here working in trade, commerce, business, and industry, depositing your Federal Reserve notes in the bank. But if you were working in private business and you are collecting gold and silver coin and trading your labor, which is property, for gold and silver, which is property, that's a property-to-property transaction. You're never going to hear from the IRS or the EPA or the OSHA people or anybody else. If you buy a house and pay for it in gold coin and go work on that house and fix it up and then turn around and sell that house for gold coin, you'll never hear from the government. Don't write me a letter and say that's impossible. I do it every day. If I can do it, you can do it. It's just that you don't know how to do it. But then I'm not complaining about the People's Republic of Michigan or Missouri or California. And I'm not complaining about the IRS or the EPA or the State Tax Commission or the Highway Patrolman or Social Lady or anybody else. They don't mess with me. Why don't they mess with me? Because I don't have any contracts with them. Which is exactly what God told us clear back in Exodus chapter 18. He says, don't make any covenants or contracts with these foreign and alien gods, or it'll come back and bite you in the butt. And you people have made these covenants and contracts with these foreign and alien gods, and sure enough, it's come back and bitch in the butt, and now you're complaining about it. Join the Army and then complain about it. Go get a driver's license and then go complain about the highway patrolman. Go get a marriage license and then go complain about social lady. Go get a social security number and then complain about the income tax, will you? In law, we call it the proximate cause of your own injury. Now, that case dealing with Assumpson is called Moses versus McFarland and Two Burroughs, 1005. It's a case that sparked the American Revolution and caused Thomas Jefferson to say that the English law, since that date, should not be used in this country. The method of persuading people to volunteer into the civil law is the 20th century, or in the 20th century, is accomplished by social security cards, drivers and business licenses, and other contractual entanglements with the government. It's done by our consent. We give up our inalienable rights under the Constitution and common law for privileges under the civil law of the state. It was this equitable assumption which the 7th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States was meant to outlaw by specifically providing that in suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. You don't get any jury trial in a divorce. What the hell you got a marriage license for? I don't know, boys and girls, up to you. You know, these are choices that you had to make, and you made those choices. Now, the bright spot in all of this, if you ever wake up, most people don't, but if you ever wake up and say to yourself, well, geez, I'd like to trade in all of my privileges and franchises for just plain, pure freedom of choice, you can do that. You can still do that in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there, but I would suspect you probably could do the same thing in Australia, New Zealand, and Great Britain, and France. They're all Anglo-Saxon countries. And you want to remember that God Almighty is still ruling in those countries, kind of in the background. I mean, he's not out there in the foreground telling you, you know, go stone that whore over there. He's not getting involved with that. But you have about 7,000 in each country that have bowed their knee to Baal. And if you'd like to join that little minority of people like myself, I'm not complaining. I don't think that the income tax is good for America or good for Americans, but Americans prefer the income tax to tithing. You people would rather pay 17 to 42% of everything you create and produce to the United States of America than you would to give 10% of it to God. Well, hell, I'm not opposed to that. If that's what you prefer to do, get after it. But I'm a pig, and I'd just soon put the rest of the difference in that money in my pocket and spend it the way I want to. Now, Americans prefer Social Security. In fact, they call it the third rail of politics in this country. Americans prefer Social Security to individual responsibility. Well, I don't care. That's a choice for you to make. And most Americans have made it, and most Americans prefer Social Security, and they can just keep after it. I have to shake my head. The only people that could be involved in Social Security are people that can't count. Because if at any time you people learn how to count and you're able to do the arithmetic concerning Social Security, it is the poorest retirement program that was ever devised by the mind of man. I have never seen anything that pays as poorly as Social Security. If there's anything out there that's as poor a program as Social Security, write and let me know, would you? Let me know. No insurance company in this country can pay you back a nickel less than what you've paid in. Only Social Security can pay you back less. Less. It's so bad with Social Security that all of you real smart people, and Social Security hurts the smartest people, the people with the most talent and the highest incomes are the ones that get stiffed the most. I guess it's poetic justice for being educated idiots, people with letters after their names. Get this, kids. If you are a doctor, a lawyer, or a real estate broker making $100,000 a year or more, you're in the top 5% of income earners. Now, that's the top 5%. Partner, you're in the top 400. I mean, you're up here at the pinnacle of success. 95% of us dummies down here at the bottom make less money than you. Okay. Now, you're paying in the maximum rate of Social Security, which is right at 80 grand on $80,000 a year. So on $80,000 a year, you pay the maximum 15.3%. Let's figure out what that is. Let's just take $80,000, round it off. It isn't exactly that. But 80,000 times 15.3% self-employed, $12,240 a year. We'll just round it off to $12,000 a year. You're paying in $12,000 a year times 45 years. That's $550,800. That's $500,000. That's $500,000. That's what you're paying into the Social Security program. And guess what you're going to draw out when you retire? Okay, you add it up. You paid in $500,000. When you retire, you get $1,200 a month. Okay, $1,200. And how long are you going to live? You're going to retire at age 65 and die at age 75, so times 120 months, 144,000. You got that? 144,000, 150 grand. You pay 550 in, you get back 150 back. Isn't that just real special? God, I thought you'd love it. You got a degree, probably in economics. I got a daughter like that. She has a degree from college in economics. She's a CPA. CPA. Pays her Social Security and loves it. And her old dad, you know, loves his daughter. Well, the only daddies could love a dumb daughter like that. But, I mean, that girl is suffering from the terminal stupids. Terminal. I don't think there's any help for somebody like that. What that boils down to is that for every $5 you pay in, you get $1 back. The government's going to charge you $4 to administer that. Now, kids, if I gave you $500,000, do you think you'd have to pay me $400,000 to administer that for you? Do you think you could take care of it yourself? It's worse than that. Instead of you giving me the $500,000 to administer it for you, why don't you keep your own $500,000 and administer it for yourself? Could you do worse than that? Could you take $500,000? Could you take $500,000 and administer it and then only give yourself 20% of it back and squander 80% on administration costs? Insurance companies aren't allowed to do that, not here in the United States. And that's for the smart guys. And that's for guys with degrees. Third rail of politics, I call that. Hey, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial. Excuse me. Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about admiralty. Before I get back to admiralty over here, Social Security is a classic case of admiralty, and if you've got a Social Security complaint, if you've got a problem, Social Security has their own administrative law court. No juries, of course. You walk into summary process, and they tell you this is where the bear does it. Okay. Again, that's the antithesis of our common law. Now, Americans love that. Absolutely love it. Complain about it, but they love it, and they keep voting for it. And they keep voting. It's called the third rail of politics. And I mentioned to you that if you're in the high-income bracket making, you know, $100,000 a year or more, you're paying in $5 into Social Security. Well, let's just try it. $150,000. Paying $150,000 divided by $550,000 equals, come on, 27%. So they're going to pay you back 27%, a little over a fourth. I said they're going to take 80%. It's not. It's only 73%. 73. Honest to God, you guys with college degrees, do you need to pay somebody 73% of what you give them to give you back 27%? Hey, listen, I'll do it for 50. Hell, I'll do it for 40. Send me your money, I'll do it for 30. I can outbid the United States government on that deal. In fact, any insurance company in America can do better than that. They can give you back the whole $550,000. Of course, it isn't adjusted for inflation, but then neither is Social Security. Some guy said to me the other day, oh, what about that COLA, C-O-L-A, cost of living increase? Oh, yeah, for 2006, it was 3.2%. Do you remember that? And inflation runs about 8.6%. That's the official number. It's actually more like 10 or 12%. Oh, yeah, cost of living. Americans are so dumb. They're dead from their butts both ways, Americans, just dead. But listen, I got to tell you about you blue-collar workers. See, with blue-collar guys, you're paying in 16.1% because, see, you're a plumber and you work for the Ajax Plumbing Company. And then you think your boss is paying half of that for you. If I got news for you, partner, your boss ain't paying jack diddly squat for you. You're paying all of it, and you pay it all through your labor. It's your labor that creates all of the wealth, every damn dime. You laborers out there, let me tell you, from the perspective of the boss, because I'm the employer, the CEO, I'm the boss, let me tell you, it's the hired help that produces every damn dime. And then out of that, we give you your paid vacation. Got that? Paid vacation. Like, I'm your great benefactor there, partner. Well, where do you think I got the money to pay you your paid vacation? Didn't I get that from your labor? And where did you think I got the money to pay your half of your Social Security tax? Didn't I get that from your labor? And where do you think I'm the boss now? Where do you think I got the money to pay your unemployment tax? Did you think I'm just a real nice guy and I'm digging into my personal bank account to pay your unemployment tax for you? And you people need to start waking up and start thinking for yourselves. So you're a plumber working for Ajax over here, see, and you're making about $20 an hour. So let's give you $20 an hour times 2,000 hours a year. $40,000. So you're right at the median average. Half the people in America make more money than you. Half the people in America make less money than you. Okay? In fact, I think the median average is $22 an hour. Well, I'll just figure this out. You got 43,000. 43,000 divided by 2,000 hours in a year. It's 2150. So you're making 2150 an hour. And you're paying 16% in Social Security going into this fund for you. All right? So let's just try that. Let's try our 40,000 times, get my famous Texas Instruments Sharp 1197 G3 calculator out here. 40,000 times 16.1 is $6,440 a year. $6,440 a year. Oh, let's round it off to 6,500. Let's just do that times 45 years. $289,800. That's pushing $300,000. You're going to work for, you're going to create and produce, you're going to earn $300,000, and that's going to be paid into the Social Security fund for you. You know how much you're going to get back? $805 a month was my number. $805 times 120. $96,600. So let's be big guys, and let's give you a whole $100,000, okay? So for every $3 you pay in, you get $1 back. Got that? Every $3 you pay in, partner, plumber, carpenter, electrician. The government, big-time dudes that they are, they're going to give you $1 back, one inflated dollar back in 45 years into the future, purchasing power back. You're going to be paying in today's 100 cents. What do you think that's going to be worth in 45 years? Then you got the low-income guy, you know, the guy that's making minimum wage, that's $5.15 an hour. Let's just try that one, 5.15 times 2,000 hours in a year. That's 10,300 times 16.1. $16,583, rounded off to, $1,658 a year. We can just multiply that times 45 years, and then he's going to pay it about $75,000. $75,000. He gets $500 a month. $500 a month times 120 times 120, he's going to get $60,000 of it back. That's the best deal in America. You pay in $75,000, you get $60,000 of it back. That's the best deal you can get, minimum wage. The dumbest people in the society do better than the smartest people in the society with Social Security. God, isn't that just real special? And remember, all this comes under admiralty, admiralty and maritime. And that's because we didn't like the common law. We didn't like the law of God. We don't want the Ten Commandments. We want the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. With the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto comes the admiralty. With the Ten Commandments comes the common law. With the Ten Commandments comes responsibility and property rights. And, of course, with the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto, the government takes responsibility and takes care of you, like FEMA takes care of you people down in New Orleans and Gulfport. God bless FEMA. Aren't they wonderful? They're just down there working their hearts out for you, aren't they? You paid your taxes, and here's what you get, graft and corruption and theft on a scale unimagined until Hurricane Katrina. Now, getting back to admiralty, the admiralty law encompasses all of the controversies arising out of acts done on or relating to the sea and questions of prize. Prize is that law dealing with war and the spoils of war, such as capture of ships, goods, materials, and property, both real and personal. Prizes. There's a guy in the florist business. He goes down to the airport. He's got $9,000 cash in his pocket, and he goes to buy a ticket. He puts his cash out, and he buys his ticket. The ticket agent reports him to the police. The police detain him, take his $9,000, and he has to prove that he's paid his taxes and that this isn't drug money. That's called an admiralty prize. A drug dealer, he's driving down the Highway 44, and the Highway Patrol stops him, and they open his trunk, and they find $2 million, and they seize it, and let these guys go. It's an admiralty prize. I was in Baltimore one day, and I didn't have anything to do walking around the courthouse, so I ducked into this courtroom, and there was a case going on. And there was a young kid there, a kid to me, he was probably 20, 25 years old. And that's all it said, just this kid, and a prosecutor, and an undercover cop, and the judge. There's four people in the play, and then just me. They're back there as a court reporter there. Five up there and me back here in the pews watching the service. And so the prosecutor, he puts this undercover cop on the stand, and he says, well, on June 13th, were you over here at the Ajax Pool Hall? Yep, yeah, well. And while you were in the Ajax Pool Hall, did you see Joe Baloney over here? I did. And is Joe Baloney here in court today? Yeah, yes. Can you point him out? Yeah, he's that guy right there at the defense table. And Joe Baloney, did you know him from before? Yeah, I did. Did you know that Joe Baloney was a convicted drug pusher or user? Yeah. Been convicted for illegal drug usage, hadn't he? Yep. Yeah. And so did you know that he was on parole? Yep. And so did you go over and search him? Yep. And when you searched him, did you find anything? Yep. And what did you find? I found $1,235 on him. And did you seize this $1,235? Yes, I did. And then did you submit that $1,235 to a drug lab examination? Yes, I did. And what did they find? They found 80% of the money had cocaine residue on it. So the prosecutor turns to the judge and says, well, that money should be forfeited to the state under this forfeiture statute from the legislature. And so the judge looks over at this guy and he says, okay, have you got anything that you want to put on? You got any witnesses, evidence, or testimony? Do you want to take the stand in your own defense? And this guy says, no, I don't know. And the judge says, now, you heard the evidence that's been presented, and are you sure you don't want to present any evidence, son? You want to get up here and testify to any facts? And nope, I don't want to testify. The judge says, okay, case is closed. Now, Mr. Prosecutor, do you have any closing arguments? Prosecutor gets up and says, well, this guy's a drug dealer. He's been convicted in the past. He's got $1,235 in his pocket. We tested the money in the crime lab, and we found 80% of it has cocaine on it. So therefore, we think it's drug money and ought to be forfeited under this statute to the state of Maryland. The judge says, thank you very much. And he says to this guy, says, okay, do you have a closing statement? And the young fellow said, you bet I do. Boy, you bet I do. And he got up there, and boy, he just waxed eloquent. And he said, listen, that 80% of money, all 80% of all the money in circulation, Judge, has cocaine residue on it. And he said, I'm a contractor. I mean, I'm an employee of a contractor, and that was my paycheck on Friday. I got $1,250. I went down, cashed my check at the bank, and Judy, the bank teller, cashed it for me and gave me cash. I went down to Joe's Pool Hall, and I was buying a few rounds of beers and having a good time and just minding my own business. And I've been dinking around with drugs for a long time, and I'm just clean as you can get. And you should give me back my $1,235 because that's my money, earned lawfully and legally in the contracting business, in the contracting job. Judge says, okay, thank you very much. And then the judge renders his verdict, and he says, now, based upon all of the witnesses, evidence, and testimony that's been presented here today, the court finds that the state has proved its case. Notice the term, based upon all of the witnesses, evidence, and testimony. Now, see, if this kid wanted to win his case, it was fairly easy. He didn't know what the hell he was doing, but it was fairly easy. He needed to subpoena in his boss and subpoena in Judy at the bank. Judy at the bank would have said, oh, yeah, he came in about 5 o'clock, and I cashed his check, and it was $1,322. He could have subpoenaed in the check with a subpoena deuces tecum from his boss. He could have brought his boss in, went to subpoena, and said, hey, boss, testify. Do I work for you? Did you pay me $1,335 for the week? The kid could have proven his case. He didn't know how. He's in admiralty. There's no jury. This is an admiralty prize. This is what our forefathers rebelled against. This is why we had a Revolutionary War, because of these kinds of ex post facto laws and writs of assistance. Americans today don't even know what the hell an ex post facto law is or a writ of assistance. How in the hell could they resist? How could they rebel against something that they don't even understand? People are telling me the American people will never sit still for this tyranny. My God, they've sat still for it for 75 years. Why won't they sit still for it for another 75 years? I don't think they'd even know what to rebel against. You live in tyranny and you don't even know it. How could you oppose it? You don't even know there's a problem, much less how to solve it. Now, of course, some of us don't have the problem to start with. I'm not complaining about admiralty prizes. There shouldn't be admiralty prizes. The government shouldn't be taking people's property away from them. But, you know, this kid's got a parole agreement. Now, a parole agreement is a contract. And he said, I want to get out of jail, so I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give up my constitutional rights. And that's what I'll do. Now, G. Gordon Liddy, he was a little different character. Remember, they offered him parole. He said, kiss off, I'll serve out my time. When I leave jail, I want to be free. So he served out his 4 years and walked out free. See, the government, they're a little bit smarter than that. See, they let you stew in there for a couple, 3 years, and then they say, now, look, if you want to get out on parole, here's what we're going to do for you. You sign this parole agreement. You sign this parole agreement. You sign this contract with the state, and you make this agreement. Then you waive all of your civil and constitutional rights, and then you come out, and then you complain about your parole officer, you complain about your government. This is the crazy part of it. You know, Americans, at least a lot of you out there, you claim to be sovereign citizens. The word sovereign, by definition, means lawmaker. Lawmaker means boss, doesn't it? I mean, I'm the boss here. I make the laws for my hired men. I get up in the morning, and I go out, and I say, hey, Joe, I want you to do this, that, and another thing, and here's the way I want it done, and here's about the time schedule I want you to do it. I'm the sovereign. He is the laborer. He is the ward. I'm the guardian. He's the ward. Americans, voters, see themselves as being sovereign. We elect our representatives, and we're the boss, and they're our servants. Now, that's preposterous poppycock. Senator Ted Kennedy is not your servant. He's your master. You haven't elected a servant. You've elected a guardian. And as a guardian, he goes to Washington. He makes the laws that he determines are good for you, the wards. That's the way the game is played. That's the way it works. You know it as well as I do. You can sit there and write letters to Washington until you're blue in the face, and they're still going to pass whatever legislation General Motors, Microsoft, and IBM tell them. Now, here, your servants. If these guys were really your servants, you've got your chauffeur, your butler, and your cook making your laws for you and telling you when to get up, when to go to bed, and what to do in between. They rule over you with rigor. You complain that you're living in the People's Republic of Michigan. Come on, kids. You are the sovereigns and you're the masters, and your kitchen help is making your laws for you and telling you how to live? And you call that freedom? You call that liberty? Well, excuse me, what would you call tyranny? What would you call slavery? Maritime causes is the system of law which relates to commerce, navigation. Notice the word commerce. Commerce, commerce clause. Trade, commerce, business, and industry. Article 1, Section 8, the commerce clause. Maritime causes is that system of law which relates to commerce, navigation, and controversies arising from maritime ventures which are adjudicated in the admiralty courts. However, a person need not be on a ship at sea to be under admiralty jurisdiction. This jurisdiction can attach merely because the subject matter falls within the scope of maritime law, such as the use of bills, notes, checks, and credit, which all fall under this jurisdiction. Troops, kids, didn't God tell you to use just weights and balances? Didn't your founding fathers give you the Coinage Act of 1792 with gold and silver coin? And didn't you wake up one day and say, no, we don't want any of this crap. We want a Federal Reserve System. We want paper money. We want credit cards. Isn't that what you said back in 1913? And now you're complaining about what? The People's Republic of Michigan? Come on, children. Come on, children. It's time to wake up. Smell the coffee, don't you think? All right, I'm about out of time again, kids. We got to leave it right there. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is heard seven days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, just go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.